Welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 436 for January 8th, 2014. We are excited to announce that this Stutter Talk episode or course will be available for CEUs for approximately 6 months free of charge through the National Stuttering Association. For complete details regarding the continuing education units being offered by the National Stuttering Association, go to their website, westutter.org. Stutter Talk and the National Stuttering Association have several more CEU episodes planned. Be sure and check back at stuttertalk.com and westutter.org in the coming weeks. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering, one podcast at a time. Today's topic is ADHD and stuttering. That's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and stuttering. I'm your host, Peter Reitzis. I'm a person who stutters and a speech language pathologist, and I'd like to welcome return guest, Dr. Joseph Donaher. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Great. Dr. Joseph Donaher is the academic and research program director at the Center for Childhood Communication at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Dr. Donaher is an assistant professor of otolaryngology at the University of Pennsylvania, and he is a board recognized specialist in fluency. Now, I got the title right there, Joe.
You did. That almost took up the entire hour, though.
Good job. Yeah. All right. Get us started here, Joe. What do we need to know first about ADHD and stuttering?
Well, it's a massive topic. And when you and I were talking about putting this together, you know, there's so many different areas we can talk about. We could talk just about general ADHD because clinicians need to know more about that and they want to know more about that. We could talk about stuttering. We could talk about stuttering and ADHD. So it's an overwhelming topic, as you and I have discussed. But I think what's most important is that clinicians shouldn't be scared of the diagnosis of ADHD. In the stuttering world, we often talk about how clinicians feel undereducated and unprepared to work with people who stutter. Now, add on top of that a diagnosis that they're equally scared of working with. And it often becomes something that people avoid or run from like the plague. So I want to start by saying, clinicians, you have the skill set and you know what to do. And what we'll hopefully do today is talk a little bit about mapping out some of the ways you can approach kids with these issues and some of the things you can do clinically.
Now, I know you've joked before that one of the things about this topic is there's not an awful lot of research on ADHD and stuttering.
No, I mean, one of the things I like to do professionally is I like to know about things that other people don't know a whole lot about because then no one can question you. So this is an area that we really are seeing emerging literature. We're seeing the literature base just really skyrocketing now, and it's really exciting to be in on that. And it's a really interesting topic for me because it comes from clinicians. When you talk to school-based clinicians who see tons of kids, ADHD is something that comes up all of the time. And so even though the literature base isn't there yet, the clinical examples and the questions from clinicians are always there. So it is exciting.
So when we're approaching this from an evidence-based practice approach, we're really using the evidence that we're gathering in our therapy sessions, right?
Yeah. I mean, you've talked about evidence-based practice in the show a ton. And I think often when we talk about evidence-based practice, we rely way too heavily just on the literature base. But evidence-based practice truly is taking the literature base, incorporating what you know professional from your clinical knowledge, and incorporating the needs and wants and things that the family are interested in. So when we talk about evidence-based practice, and when we talk about it in this talk, we're going to be pulling from the speech literature. We're going to be pulling from the psychology literature and the neurology literature. And we're also talking about clinical practice. And I studied under Woody Starkweather, And one of the things I always loved about Woody was he was a clinician first. Hmm. And he did research and he wrote and he did everything else, but he was grounded as a clinician. And I like to think that I'm the same way. I still do evaluations every week. I still follow a caseload of kids who stutter. And I think what's interesting about this topic is it was generated from issues that came up in clinical practice.
Yes. And speaking to my colleagues in the schools, where we're in the trenches with speech therapy, this is a topic that we feel is underreported, and folks have asked me about it quite a bit. So, and our listeners should know that you are really the go-to guy on ADHD and stuttering. If they don't believe me, just go do a Google search and they will quickly find that out. So one of the things from hearing you speak before, it seems like there's some data on the prevalence of ADHD and stuttering. So could you sort of break that down? So when you're working with children who stutter, or when you're working with children, how many of them, percentage-wise will stutter? How many will have ADHD, and what's the co-occurrence?
Well, I think one of the hard things here is when we talk about prevalence data, it's very difficult to get good prevalence numbers. So even though we're going to talk about prevalence data, it's hard enough to find what the prevalence of stuttering in children is. So we look at that about 5% as the prevalence of stuttering in the pediatric population. Unfortunately, that number is most likely underestimated. And the methodological issues that come up with doing a large-scale study make it very difficult to know what is the true prevalence numbers. The same issue happens in ADHD because, again, they say 6 to 7% of children have ADHD, but that number can change depending on how the study is organized. So some studies show much higher prevalence, some show a lower prevalence. So now you have two disorders, both with questionable prevalence data, and then you want to combine them and say, what's the co-occurrence between these two disorders?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's very difficult. I think another thing that makes this very difficult is the study I did last year. Corin and I put out a study, and more than half of the parents that were interviewed scored their child at a diagnostic level for ADHD that was over the level we would want and over the level for a diagnosis. Unfortunately, anytime you base your numbers on surveys of parents or parent perception of an issue, you're going to tend to overinflate that issue. The other thing is when parents have their children tested or they come forward for help, it's not a typical sample of children then, because these are parents that are looking for help for a specific issue. Also, if you look at the population of kids I see, because of the work I do, I tend to see more children who stutter with ADHD because people refer them to me specifically for that issue. So I think the prevalence issue is a really difficult thing to bring up. Ehud Yairi, you and I were talking about this in the email the other day. Ehud Yairi talks about how reading problems and other things like ADHD coexisting with stuttering, the numbers are artificially high. And I agree with him 100%. The big thing we look at is for a diagnosis of ADHD, a psychologist or a neurologist can give that, but speech language pathologists, we can't make that diagnosis. But often we'll look at kids and we'll see children with attention issues or impulsivity issues, and we'll assume it's ADHD. People in the schools talk about it being overdiagnosed all of the time.
Right.
And when you look at the research on ADHD, it's actually underdiagnosed and undertreated.
Yeah, that all makes a lot of sense to me. I can tell you that in the schools over the years, so often is the case where the teacher, the speech therapist, the team will bring up issues related to ADHD to a parent, and the parent will say very quickly, I'm not going to medicate my child, meaning they're not going to follow through with an evaluation. And they just, and you know, we respect what parents want for their children, but it is my experience that there's probably, I dare say, a lot more children in the schools that could be diagnosed with ADHD.
Right. And, you know, the problem is that when a child is really struggling with the symptoms of ADHD, many times it's obvious because they aren't functioning well in the academic setting. So it kind of sticks out. But we'll talk later about different types of ADHD. And for some different types of ADHD, the child's not going to stick out, and schools won't be able to identify this child as struggling or won't be able to see there's a problem with this child until after the grades start falling and the child starts having negative academic experiences. So for many children with ADHD, they don't have that hyperactive piece. So it's not evident to the teachers. And that's where we get kids that are underdiagnosed there. And the other thing is many children have subclinical levels of attention issues or impulsivity issues. And what that means is subclinical means it's not high enough to have a diagnosis of ADHD, but it's high enough to impact their academic functioning, and it's high enough to cause trouble or to challenge that child to a level where they're not going to be successful.
Yeah, I don't want to complicate this too much, but when you say that to me now, I think that we sometimes say the same things about children who the teacher or the parent suspect may be on the autistic spectrum, and they go through an evaluation and it turns out, well, where the autism team says we're not going to label them on the autistic spectrum. However, they share a lot of these traits.
Right. And any diagnosis where there isn't a specific test, a blood test you can do or something like that, is going to have that problem related to it. So, for example, if you go to your pediatrician to find out about ADHD, chances are it's going to be harder for that pediatrician to have the knowledge base as someone who specializes in ADHD. And the same thing with autism, the same thing with other issues that are similar to that that affect children.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us here with Dr. Joseph Donaher. Our topic today is ADHD and stuttering. And before we get into ADHD more specifically, talk to us, Joe, about fluency, disfluency, and stuttering.
Excellent. Pete, this is something that you and I have talked about over the years, the definitions of fluency and disfluency.
Oh, sure.
And I know that you're not a big fan of the term disfluency, but I think semantically, I want to kind of cover this because I think we're talking about a few different things here. When I've heard you discuss that the term disfluency shouldn't be used, you've often discussed it as it shouldn't be used as a synonym for stuttering.
So, or a euphemism, sure.
Yeah. Right. So instead of saying that you stutter, you're a person who stutters, some folks will say, well, I'm disfluent, or it's a disfluency thing, because they're scared of the word stuttering. So stuttering becomes almost a taboo word, or it becomes the S word.
Sure, sure.
And that I agree wholeheartedly with you, that if it's stuttering, call it stuttering. Okay? But I like to kind of back up and just talk about fluency and disfluency for a second. Now fluency really just describes a continuum of forward flowing speech. So on one end, you have very high fluency. And on the other end, you would have lower fluency. And that low-level fluency we call disfluency, or disruption to the flow of speech. Now, I talk about fluency and disfluency all of the time because clinically for me, I'm often trying to differentiate, A, is this a fluency issue? And B, is it a disfluency issue or a stuttering issue? And what I mean by that is fluency, again, just the forward flow of speech, disfluency meaning a disruption to that. We'll often see children with language issues, children with ADHD, children with organization problems, where they're highly disfluent. So their forward flowing speech is marked by a lot of disruptions. However, the types of disfluencies don't point towards stuttering. Stuttering is a neurologically based disorder, and it results in these characteristic disfluencies that we talk about, part word repetitions, prolongations, and blocks. Those types of disfluency are very different than the disfluencies we would see that are secondary to attention, secondary to organization. Those types of disfluencies would be more of word repetitions, phrase repetitions, revisions, And they really have more to do with the individual struggling with the organization and formulation of language. And so when I say disfluency, I'm talking about an umbrella term. One pattern of disfluency would steer me more towards stuttering, and other patterns of disfluency would really steer me towards organization and formulation.
So, Joe, those are excellent points. So let me put you on the hot seat. Before going on air, we were discussing a YouTube video from the Johnson & Johnson YouTube channel featuring a child who has ADHD. The video is titled Brad Story, a 12-year-old with ADHD. Let's play a short edited clip from that video, and you can tell us where this falls as disfluency, as stuttering, or as a little bit of both. So let's hear that clip.
This is my Lego town, and it's basic, and tons of things are happening. There's the blue building.
I'm good at Legos, and I have ADHD, and I kind of have trouble thinking of some ideas. I have thought organization problems sometimes. I have a lot of trouble staying on track with homework, so I might get distracted. About 1 out of every 5 minutes, I'm probably distracted with homework, so it takes me a long time.
So what do you say to those disfluencies, Joe?
Well, first of all, as the father of a 12-year-old daughter, that little 12-year-old guy is a super smart kid, mm-hmm. and he really has a nice awareness level of what his own issues are. And I think what's interesting is I talked earlier about how there's different types of disfluency. The difficult thing is it's not one or the other. Often we'll see patterns that are mixed. So there'll be typical disfluencies or organization type disfluencies and some stuttering like disfluencies. And what's important to remember is that all children will demonstrate some stuttering like disfluencies once in a while and some typical disfluencies once in a while. What we look at is we look at what seems to be a bigger issue or which has the larger proportion in a speech sample. Now, this speech sample is very interesting, and it kind of reminded me there's a research group out of England, Engelhart and Associates, and they describe ADHD as a problem with the efficiency and fluency of speech. And they talk about different language organization pieces and reasons why someone with ADHD would be more disfluent. Now, this child, when he talked about it, he talked about things that he said, sometimes I have trouble thinking of coming up with ideas. And the quote I love that he said was, by thought organization problems. Hmm. He said, sometimes I have thought organization problems. And that gets right into how I kind of described it earlier. But what's interesting when you listen to his speech, the first couple behaviors you hear phrase repetition, and then you hear revisions where he starts talking about something and then backs up and alters the way he says it. You hear some fillers and one or two word repetitions. These behaviors to me, these disfluencies, are not stuttering-like. And they have more to do, again, with his organizing and formulating language, or as he would call it, his thought organization problems.
Yeah, I agree with all of what you said, just said completely. I will mention that I did hear a broken word repetition where he said, I think, staying, which we could often put with stuttering. However, it felt like it was a revision and not a broken word stutter.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's hard is a lot of times we'll hear these disfluency patterns that kind of go along with a variety of neurological issues or diagnoses where there'll be mid-word breaks or final word breaks. In neurology literature, you'll hear it called palatalia. And so it's someone who talks, cocks, cocks, cocks like that and repeats the last sound or the last syllable of a word. And many people believe it's kind of a way to stall or a way to buy time for you to organize and think about what you want to say next. However, we see these kids who present with those types of disfluencies who don't say anything afterwards, who aren't aware that they're doing it. So there seems to be, at least for some children, these mid-word and part-word repetitions that we don't really know a whole lot about, but we're seeing more and more clinical examples of it, and we're even seeing more and more case studies coming out in the literature talking about these atypical disfluency patterns.
So just to try to summarize a bit what you just said, just from that short speech sample of Brad we just heard, we did not hear stuttering-like behaviors in the sense of prolongations or blockages of speech. We heard some repetitions that we're not going to associate with stuttering. And we heard what some might call normal disfluencies, which are the revisions. Is that about right?
Yeah. I mean, think about it, even when you just gave that answer, or I just did it there. He was repeating words. He was repeating words because he wanted to think and organize.
Yeah.
So it didn't seem like he knew the actual word he wanted to say, but motorically was having trouble producing it.
Yeah, that definitely. I think that's spot on, as some folks might say. So for the purposes of today's conversation on ADHD and stuttering, is there anything else you want to share with us about fluency, disfluency, and stuttering?
Well, I think, again, it's not always crystal clear whether it's one pattern or the other. So clinicians really have to break these samples down and look at different things. Look at the types of behaviors they are hearing. Look at the individual and ask them, what are they thinking when this is happening? What do they feel with it? What's really interesting with ADHD is we know when individuals with ADHD discuss something or they're talking about something, they tend to use more words. So if you give for example, if you look at the research, it shows having them describe a picture or an action, things like that. Children with ADHD will use more words to describe the picture. So they put extra things in. And you heard with his speech, he repeated phrases. He repeated things. He started talking and then backed up and gave another piece of information. And all of those extra words are what makes it more likely that the individual is going to be disfluent. It causes them to talk faster at times. And that's why the example you gave with stay, it was a very rapid repetition.
Yeah, yeah.
But it stayed at the word level and it didn't truncate down to a part word repetition.
I'm so glad you brought that up. And when we get into the implications for speech therapy, I want to come back to that because that should lead us to a good discussion on where to go in therapy and what to target first.
Right. And right now, this kind of leads to a good point here is you might say, why do we care about this? And there was a research paper a couple of years ago that asked, does type of disfluency tell us anything? And the researcher was actually saying it doesn't tell us anything about stuttering. And I might kind of cautiously agree it doesn't tell us a whole lot about stuttering. But types of disfluency tells us a great deal about disfluency. It can tell us whether it's more likely a stuttering pattern or something that's characteristic of stuttering, or whether it's more characteristic of an attention issue or a language issue. And what's important about that is that steers your intervention. And if you use, let's say, a stuttering approach with someone who's disfluent because of organization or because of language, chances are you're not going to be overly effective. Just as if you tried to take someone who stutters and teach them language skills or things like that, chances are you're not going to impact the stuttering. So by breaking this down in the beginning, what we're doing is we're leading towards our intervention.
Those are just excellent points. This is Stutter Talk. I'm Peter Reitzis here with Dr. Joseph Donaher from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He is the director, I want to say, of the Stuttering Center, but it's the Center for Childhood Communication at the Children's Hospital?
Yeah, the Center for Childhood Communication is made up of audiologists, speech-language pathologists, behavioral health counselors. We're under the ENT department, and the stuttering program is one program within that center.
So let's move into attention deficit hyperactivity disorder criteria, ADHD criteria. What are the types or subtypes of ADHD, Dr. Donner?
Sure. Well, first of all, ADHD is a neurologically based disorder, and it impairs the individual's ability to regulate their attention and behaviors efficiently. And some of the hallmark characteristics of ADHD we think about are short and inconsistent attention span, hyperactivity or high activity level, and then impulsivity. Now, what's interesting is years ago we'd hear ADHD and ADD. Well, now it's kind of all considered ADHD, and there's three types of ADHD. The first type of ADHD, and it's considered to be about half of the individuals with ADHD, is characterized by hyperactivity and impulsivity, and that's about half. Then we look at about 40% of individuals with ADHD have ADHD inattentive. So they would have the attention problems, the focusing problems, but they're not going to have that hyperactive component to it. And in the past, ADHD kind of just included that hyperactive impulsive piece, and ADD was more what we talked about with the inattention piece. And then for about 10% of individuals with ADHD, they demonstrate both the hyperactive impulsive characteristics and the inattentive characteristics.
So they're both, so the inattentive and the hyperactivity is combined in about 10% of the diagnosed cases.
Right. And let's kind of break those down a little bit more, because I think if we talk about some specifics, it'll be a little bit clearer.
So yeah, please.
The first, the kind of hyperactive or impulsive characteristics and what they are. Individuals, they fidget, they squirm a lot, they move a lot. They're up and down from their seat, you know. You've all worked with children who they're sitting in the chair and they're kind of flopping over, they're sliding down, they get up frequently, they're moving all over. They climb about excessively. A good example for the hyperactive impulsive piece, and parents often talk about this, when you bring this saying up, they're like, exactly. Children often act as if they're on the go or driven by a motor. And that's an old term that psychologists use, but parents of children with ADHD, that seems to be a really good way to describe it. Now, the other area, the inattentive piece, some characteristics of that would be where the individual fails to pay attention to details or on homework and things like that. They may skip over things. They make careless mistakes. They have trouble keeping their attention in play tasks, in homework, in academic work, in school. They often appear like they're not listening to you, but it's more that they're paying attention to other things. And it's funny because a lot of times people talk about kids with ADHD not focusing. And the issue really is they're focusing on everything. So they're noticing every single thing that's happening in their environment. And what happens with that is it's hard to just cue those things out or filter those things out and just focus on one area. So again, with inattention, we see kids really that those tasks that require sustained mental effort over time become very problematic for them.
And I just have to say, I love hearing you talk about this topic because I can already see using what you're saying with a parent. So when a teacher says, and they sometimes, you know, they're very good teachers, but they sometimes will accidentally say something that sounds harsh, like your child can't attend.
Right.
And then another way to sort of give that back to the teacher is, well, the child is trying to attend to so much that's going on in the classroom that it's a challenge for them to focus on specific tasks.
Right. So a child sitting in the classroom, the teacher's saying he won't attend. Right.
Yeah.
And to me, won't and can't really disturb me because no child says, you know what I want? I want ADHD. I want to have problems with hyperactivity and attention. You know, so it's not necessarily that they won't do it or they can't. There's no volitional agreement from the child saying, I'm going to do this. Okay. It's that they can't do it. They're not making a choice to do it. No child chooses to do that. So I think that's important. But think about a child in the classroom. The child who demonstrates the hyperactivity characteristics, they're going to be known. The teacher's going to see them jumping up and down. The teacher's going to see them interrupting when other people are talking. They're going to see that they're disruptive. The issue often, though, is for the inattentive child, the teacher has no idea. So the teacher might say, open up your book to page 27, read the first two paragraphs, and answer the odd questions at the end of the chapter. So everyone opens their book, and the child who's inattentive isn't paying attention just to their book. They're noticing everything else. So they're losing the instruction, and they don't know what to do. Now, if a child is in that situation, and they look over at their neighbor, and they're trying to figure out what to do, they may be able to catch up. But the problem is no one can identify that that child's struggling there because there isn't any overt disruption or there isn't any loud outburst. And so often children with the characteristic of inattention are harder to diagnose and harder to help than the overt hyperactive child.
So, Joe, we just talked about the general characteristics of ADHD. How do they impact the child's speech?
Yeah, that's a great question because we've talked about generally some characteristics. But when we're talking about stuttering, we're talking about language, we're talking about speech, we want to know how these various characteristics can impact that. So I look at a couple different things here. First, we know that hyperactivity, impulsivity, and inattention can result in disfluency. So we go back to that 12-year-old, and his attention and his organization caused him to repeat words, caused him to repeat phrases, and that the result of his issue was increased disfluencies, typical disfluencies, but still disfluencies. The other areas that it can kind of impact is that imagine if you're demonstrating hyperactivity characteristics and you have an increased rate. You're talking with longer utterances, so you tend to produce those faster. You're impulsively going from one idea to the next. You're pulling in tangential information. All of those areas can exacerbate stuttering. And the way they exacerbate stuttering usually is the rate issue. So for someone who's already stuttering, these issues can make them stutter more. For someone who doesn't stutter, they can result in more disfluencies, usually typical disfluencies. Then the last piece, and the piece that we're going to talk about more in a little bit, is that these characteristics can significantly impact an individual's ability to manage their stuttering. And I think that's really important because when we're talking about therapy for someone who stutters with ADHD, we have to do things differently than if we're working with someone who just stutters. Now, let's break down the characteristic behaviors between the hyperactive impulsivity speech behaviors and the attention and focusing issues. And I think, again, these are going to be overlapped and people are going to demonstrate both, but I think it's interesting to look at them a little differently. First, someone who's very hyperactive or impulsive, they often demonstrate excessive talking or monopolizing conversations. They don't take into account the listener, or they don't wait, and they're not that back and forth or that give and take of communication. They often have difficulty listening or waiting and engaging in activities quietly, difficulty with turn taking. They frequently will jump in on others. They'll blurt out answers before the person's or the individual's done asking the questions. And we often see this relatively rapid rate of speech. And when I say that relatively rapid rate of speech, they don't even have to overtly be talking extremely fast, but they're just always talking. So there's no pause or there's no break between one sentence and the next. And there's no kind of pause to transition between ideas. So often kids who are demonstrating these kind of characteristics will appear argumentative or inflexible. So you're explaining something, and as you're explaining, they jump in and disagree or say something else. They're not waiting. They're not holding back. They're impulsively jumping in. And I think all of those language characteristics are things that speech language pathologists, after interacting with a child for a while, they can pick those things out. And when you see the interaction pieces, you start kind of noting those, and then that leads to an intervention. Now,
I was going to say that that's why like so many of the IEPs we write for children with ADHD have to maintain a topic of conversation to turn take because they're changing topics of conversation within sentences, you know, sometimes several times.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example. So what you did is you saw that the way communication was being disrupted, and then the IEP outlined how the intervention should address that specific trait.
Yeah. And I just have to say how many times, I mean, it seems like some of the characteristics of ADHD fit in with the way that some people who stutter cope with stuttering. I mean, how many times have you heard a person who stutters say, you know, once I get going on that fluency train, I don't want to stop talking, because as soon as I stop talking, then when it's my turn to talk again, I have to get started, and then I might stutter. So just as we're talking now, that sort of popped into my head of how many stutterers I have met who have said once they're on that fluency train, they don't want to stop talking.
That's a great example. And when we were talking earlier about in a diagnostic that you have to kind of map out what the individual's doing, that's something we do all the time, where we see these rate, this kind of blurting out or fast kind of spurt of speech, right? So the individual's trying to get everything out because they know if they stop, that plan or that motor piece where they have to start up again most likely could be difficult for them. So they try to just say everything they can. Now, when you look at that pattern, you really have to compare, is this individual speeding up and kind of not stopping and going fast as a compensatory strategy, or is it just their typical pattern of speech? So for someone who stutters, if you map that out and you start to talk to them about it, they can say, and they can kind of identify, well, yeah, I'm doing this because I know if I stop, it's going to be trouble. Whereas someone with an attention, especially the hyperactive piece, they're doing that and they're not even aware they're doing that. And, you know, we didn't mention this yet, but this is a very close, this is very close to the idea of cluttering, you know, and for many years, I've said that I believe cluttering is a combination of stuttering and ADHD. And when you look at the characteristics of cluttering, they so strongly mirror the characteristics of ADHD. And as we're seeing more and more work in cluttering, we're understanding more and more about this and about parts of the brain and parts of development and attention and overall cognitive linguistic processes that are impacted and that look different than stuttering, but look very similar to what we're talking about with ADHD.
Yeah, I love that you share that. And you're the only person I know who says that. And I'm really tempted to ask you more about this cluttering idea of yours, but perhaps we're going to save that for the next time that we get you back on Stutter Talk. But it is very fascinating. Yeah, please.
Okay. So now we talked about the hyperactive piece. Now let's talk about the less common attention piece there, or the inattention piece. Someone who's struggling with that attention, the way that's going to impact their speech is, again, they're not going to seem like they're listening to you. They may seem like their pragmatics are off because they're not reading social cues. They're not maintaining eye contact, body proximity. They have really poor topic maintenance, okay? So it almost might seem like they're disinterested or not engaged, you know? And so that's often a very different thing than the hyperactive piece. And if you see that, like see difficulty with sequencing or organization or cohesion of language, then that might steer you a little bit more to working on attention piece there.
So Joe, how is ADHD treated? And I mean, so let's just put the stuttering aside for a moment now. How is just straight ADHD generally or typically treated?
Well, there's multiple ways to treat ADHD. And again, as a speech language pathologist, this is a bit outside of my realm. And I don't want to make this part of the talk seem like I'm telling anyone what to do or how to do this with ADHD, because if you're suspecting your child has ADHD or if your child does have ADHD and you want to get some help there, I strongly advise that you go to a psychologist or even a neurologist who specializes in ADHD. We'll discuss kind of the basic overview of intervention, but I strongly suggest that you go to someone who specializes if what you're doing is looking for specific help for an individual. But the most common intervention for ADHD remains stimulant medications. And these are what we hear about: Concerta, Ritalin, Adderall, and things like that. And obviously, even though they're most commonly prescribed and the most well-researched approaches to ADHD, there's tons of media coverage. There's tons of families that have biases towards them. And there's a lot of negativity towards stimulant medications for ADHD. But what we have to remember is that stimulant medications are tolerated and effective in the vast majority of cases with ADHD. It's as high as 80 to 90% of individuals with ADHD do well on stimulant medications. And what these medications focus on is they focus on improving the core ADHD symptoms. So they work on task behaviors. They work on increasing attention, which allows an individual to improve their academic productivity. And again, they're specifically targeting those behaviors that we outlined.
So let me share with you, I recently corresponded with Dr. Gerald McGuire, who is a psychiatrist, and he's been on Stutter Talk many times, and he's a mutual friend of ours. And I'm going to read to you a short sentence that he shared with me. Quote, "In children who stutter who have comorbid ADHD, I usually recommend a non-dopaminergic medication first, such as Strattera or Intuniv." And I'm sorry if I pronounced those wrong. So I think he's saying he prescribes first non-stimulant medications, which I don't want to speak for him, but do not mess with the dopamine areas of the brain. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but yeah.
Right. I mean, you said it perfectly. I mean, Jerry Maguire, his work is fantastic. And when I am struggling with this stuff, Jerry's the guy I email and he gets back to me and gives me great answers for
this. In like 3 seconds, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think he sleeps, actually.
Right. But so what do you make of that? So he first, for children who stutter with ADHD, he would first look at, I think generally speaking, the non-stimulant medications, which you both, I think, agree. Again, I don't want to speak for him, but which they may be less helpful for the ADHD.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this for a second because it's important. So we have the stimulant medications, which again are the primary thing that people use. The next line of treatment would be these non-stimulant medications. And Strattera is the one that most people think of. It was the first, and it's still out there. And what these drugs do is they actually impact a different area of the brain. So they're not working on that dopamine levels in the brain. They're actually working a different way. It's a different class of drugs. Now, what's interesting here is we know that stimulant medications do have some secondary or side effects. One of the things is that stimulant medications can cause tick-like behaviors in some kids who don't have tick-like behaviors. And in children who already are demonstrating tics, they can exacerbate those tics. So for many kids, for example, with Tourette syndrome, Tourette syndrome and ADHD go hand in hand. There's a very large comorbidity between the two. And for a child with Tourette syndrome who takes stimulant medications, often they see these very large increase in the tic behaviors. So when a child can't tolerate a stimulant med, often they'll go to the non-stimulant meds. And for individuals with Tourette syndrome, the non-stimulant meds have really worked better for them. However, when I told you that they address a different part of the brain, they work on different behaviors as well. The stimulants do better on addressing those core ADHD behaviors. So the non-stimulants, they're not going to exacerbate tics or things like that, but they're also not going to be nearly as effective at treating the core symptoms of ADHD. So, and for stuttering, it's the same. We see it's kind of the same thing.
So let me try to give it back to you to see if I have it right, okay? I'm going to do my best shot here. We have some evidence that for children who stutter with comorbid ADHD, the stimulant medication treatments such as Ritalin may decrease the ADHD, but may increase the stuttering, and the non-stimulant medications such as Strattera, they work on the ADHD, but perhaps not as effectively as a stimulant medication, yet they do not increase the stuttering. Is that better?
It is. And what I think from a clinical standpoint for speech language pathologists to realize, there is not the literature base right now to tell a family of a child who has ADHD and who stutters not to use stimulant medications. And that's something I think is very important. I don't tell parents what to do with their ADHD or for ADHD. I give them the information and give their medical team the information. But I think it's premature for speech language pathologists to say to a parent, oh, well, your child has ADHD, don't take those stimulant meds because they're going to cause stuttering to increase. I think it still needs to be done on an ad hoc individual basis. And if you are someone who stutters and you're taking stimulants and you see an increase, then at least you know you have an option there. And Jerry Maguire is much better able to talk about this than I am. But I think you really need to look at it on an individual basis. And if you see an increase, you then might make a decision on it. But I don't think we're at a point yet where we tell all individuals who stutter, don't take stimulant medications for attention and focusing issues.
So this limited evidence base we have can be shared with the team, with the doctors on the team who are hopefully experts in ADHD to help along the conversation, to help make decisions.
Right. And yeah. The hard part with this is the results have been so variable and such kind of – it's all limited to case studies and things like that, that we're just not yet ready to make a determination. And we know that stuttering is such a multifactorial disorder that impacts so many areas that how could we make a decision on this for every individual who stutters? We really need to do it on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add that working in the schools with so many children, it's so – and when you talk on this topic, I always feel optimistic when you say that upwards of 80 to 90% of children who are treated for ADHD, the treatment is effective to some level. And that always – you know, that's a very optimistic finding. Like it makes me feel good to know that. But I also know that working in the schools, the medications are the dosages and the medications themselves are frequently changed. Frequently the times of the day they're taken are changed because a child may be doing well at one point and then struggling at another point with attention or behavior or being tired or being overstimulated. So, you know, these medications are changed all the time for a number of reasons. It doesn't mean that they're not effective. It means that there's ways to make them more effective.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only consistency with ADHD is inconsistency. A psychologist that chops, Dr. Stephen Soffer, I remember him telling me that, and I think it's still one of my favorite quotes about ADHD. And you frequently hear individuals with ADHD talk about why I was on this medication for a while, it was effective, and then I switched to another one because it stopped being effective. And I think that's a difficult thing because if someone has a certain condition, they find a medication that works, often they'll be on that medication for a really long time and it helps. For individuals with ADHD, especially children, as they grow and as they develop, you frequently have to change doses, you have to change medications, you have to really be on top of it and adjust it as needed.
This is Stutter Talk, stuttertalk.com. I am Peter Reitzes here with Dr. Joseph Donaher, and I just want to thank the National Stuttering Association, a wonderful self-help or organization for people who stutter, for helping to put this episode together. And the National Stuttering Association can be contacted at westutter.org. That's westutter.org. So, Joe, continuing with our implications for speech-language therapy, in a 2012 ASHA Leader article, Tetnowski and colleagues wrote that, quote, treating a client with ADHD who also stutters is a challenge that requires focusing the child on the speech difficulty before teaching any fluency-enhancing techniques. Do you agree with this?
I agree with it from the standpoint of a child with ADHD and stuttering and from a child who just is stuttering. It goes back to the work of Van Riper, and we know that identification and awareness is such an important thing. The Rileys, they published a paper in 79 and another one in 2000, and they talked about the presence of ADHD characteristics will decrease the likelihood that you're going to have successful outcomes in therapy. And what they then showed, and they did this with, I believe, about 50 children who stutter, they showed that the therapeutic outcomes for stuttering were significantly enhanced by addressing attention prior to speech therapy. Now, I'll tell you, I think that's the same for working with stuttering or stuttering with ADHD. I mean, the attention, the awareness, you have to know what's going on before you can do something different. And anyone who's ever heard me talk or heard me teach knows that I am a big fan of sports analogies in everything I in all the areas that I work with. So I'm going to give you a sports two sports analogies here. First of all, if you think about quarterbacks in the NFL, what do they do right after a game? Well, they get ready, they kind of talk to the press, and then they start watching the film from that day's game because they want to see what they did so they know what they can do differently next time. And I think that awareness piece of what we're doing and how we're performing, that's a really important thing for people who stutter to work on. Now, techniques and tools are great, but you have to know when and how to do it. So here's another example. If I was working with someone who wanted to be a track star and I wanted to teach them how to jump hurdles, you know, we'd go out to the track and I'd put the hurdle up and we'd jump it over and over again and we'd run and we'd do that. But then imagine the race was just about to start. And right before the race, I put a blindfold on them. And I said, okay, you have to run the race with your blindfold on. Well, what's going to happen is either they're going to run and keep jumping in kind of preparation for the hurdle. So they're never going to get anywhere because they're just going to keep jumping. Or they're going to run and wait till they feel the hurdle and touch it. And then they're going to jump and it's going to be too late. So regardless of what technique or tool you're using, we really need to work with individuals on becoming aware of what, when they need to do whatever they're going to do and to become aware of what's happening in their speech. And that clip kind of pulling this all together, if we looked at that clip of that young boy, the 12-year-old who was talking, he had such great self-awareness. I mean, he's talking about what's happening to him and he's talking about what's going on. Now, for him to have that level of awareness and identification, you could really move nicely in an intervention then because he can identify it, he can describe it, and then he'll know when it's happening, and then he'll know his options of what he could do differently.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know this for a fact, but when I watched that video, my assumption was that he had had some great, great supports, parenting, speech therapy, teachers, you know, it just felt like this child had really been supported.
Yeah. I mean, no child uses the terminology he uses unless he's with some speech geek who's giving him those terms. Not many kids will use thought organization problems. And
yeah,
this gets into a really great way to kind of pull this together here is when we talk about ADHD, we talked about this a little bit earlier that teachers or parents will say that a child won't do something. And again, I emphasize that it's not that they won't do it, it's that they can't do it, or in certain situations, they can't do it. And the hard part with that is then a parent says, well, they do it fine here, but they can't do it there. And that gets back to the inconsistency of ADHD. But what also is a very interesting piece of ADHD, and this comes directly as a quote from Russell Barkley, one of the foremost experts on ADHD. He talked about that ADHD is not a problem of not knowing. ADHD is a problem of not using what you know. So let's adapt that to speech language pathology with someone who stutters and is struggling with attention, focusing, and hyperactivity. They may know what technique helps. They may know how to do it. They may be able to do it in the therapy room. But then in real life situations, when everything else is going on and they're focusing on so many other things, it's hard for them to use those skills that they have or that they understand in novel situations, in real life situations. And this is the case with stuttering in general. Often people who stutter kind of get blamed and they kind of get the, they kind of have the accusation that you won't use your techniques. And again, I don't think it's they won't use their techniques. It's just that in certain situations, it's hard to pull it all together to use a technique, especially an unnatural technique. And in many situations, the goal of communicating has to supersede the goal of controlling your fluency.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we say, you know, sometimes it's just easier to stutter, or sometimes it's just easier to use avoidance techniques. And I imagine for a child with ADHD, it's easier to have your symptoms of ADHD than to focus on working on it.
Yeah, or you're not ready to at that point, you know?
Yes.
How often do we talk to speech-language pathologists who put up this kind of notion that a child, well, he won't use his techniques, he won't practice, he won't do things. And then what happens with that is then parents hear that, and then parents kind of start saying, you're not using your techniques, you're not controlling it, you're not doing this. And it all goes back to blaming the individual for that. And then what does that do? That makes the individual feel, why am I working on this? I'm not trying this. I'm not getting anywhere. So they give up and they start feeling frustrated and bad, where we have to get away from that. And we have to start talking about what you can do. How can you be aware of things? How can you do things differently? And know that it's not a black and white thing. Sometimes you might be able to do it. Sometimes it might be harder to do it. Other times you might not care about doing it. And so by really working with the individual, we can come up with some strategies to use and hopefully use them effectively in a variety of situations.
I'm glad you brought up strategy. So let me put you on the hot seat again. So earlier in the show, you mentioned that children with ADHD tend to use more words when talking and describing things. How does this affect speech therapy? I mean, how should the SLP adjust?
Well, we work on a couple things there. So one thing would be if the individual is just transitioning from one idea to the next without organizing or without formulating what they want to say, you often can just work on taking breaks, pausing. Okay, so pausing gives you time to think and organize, and it lets you move forward. Again, go back to that sample we had of the young 12-year-old. When he was talking, when he was changing from one idea to the next, that's often where you heard him revising his statements, repeating phrases to buy time. If we had worked there with giving him time to think and organize before he was talking, that would help there. So we talk about topic maintenance. We talk about being succinct in what you want to say. And all of that really helps with the organization piece. But what's interesting is it also tends to work on reducing the overt rate of speech. And reducing the rate of speech is often very fluency enhancing at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, I agree with all that. I think those are great strategies. And recently I've been doing something that's, you know, hard for me and perhaps hard for a lot of teachers or speech therapists, is that when I work with children, whether they have ADHD or not, these characteristics of changing topics and interrupting and perhaps talking about yourself all the time when never asking a question, these come up all the time. So if we start a speech therapy session with a group and I ask the children to share one or two things about Hanukkah or Christmas, and they go on and on and on. And then you literally have to say, well, thank you for sharing that, Paul, but we need to move on to Christopher. And then Christopher has a chance. And then Paul raises his hand and you think he's going to ask Christopher a question. And then Paul goes right back into telling you about his Christmas or his Hanukkah. Then you have to stop them and say, well, it's not your turn anymore. And now we're giving Christopher, you know, so like those things don't come easy to cut off a child in speech class. But I personally find it at times can be very helpful.
Yeah, and I think you have to systematically approach that. So the individual has to know, what was the reason you stopped them? What were they doing that made you jump in there? And by doing it in kind of an easier fashion where you talk about how many words did you say in that, or how long did you go on that topic, or how many words did you say on that topic? Was that enough information or was that too much information? When you start working on that awareness level for the individual to see that, you start seeing those wheels in their head move and they can say, okay, that was too much information. Years ago, I remember I didn't work on Fridays, and Thursday night I worked with a group of teenagers who stuttered and also had Tourette syndrome and ADHD. So the three boys in this group were really a handful to deal with, and they were all working on how much information they were giving on a certain topic. And I can remember one was talking about wrestling, and he went on and on for about 5 minutes, and he was giving us so much information about wrestling. And at the end, we said to him, so how was that? And he said, it was great. I told you all the stuff you needed to know and things like that. And the other boy said to him, oh, it was too much information. We didn't need to know all that stuff about where he grew up and all this stuff and all. And so we're mapping it out, okay? Then the next person would go and we'd say, okay, what are you going to talk about? And he wanted to talk about, let's say, his bike, okay? So then instead of doing two or three sentences about his bike, he did 4 or 5 minutes about his bike. And then everyone else in the group could identify that it was too much information. But it took a long time, but slowly each individual, by identifying these behaviors in peers, started to look at their own behaviors there. And slowly over time, they were able to become more aware of what they were doing. And once they were able to become aware of how that was impacting their interactions with the other kids in the group, then they started to do things differently. But one thing I want to emphasize here is it's a slow process. We're not going to see changes come quickly. And you're going to have to teach things and reteach things and reteach things and review things. Because again, it's not that the individual doesn't know, it's that it's hard for them to use those things in certain situations. But so by taking the main points, by going over them consistently, and by having the individual try things in easier ways or in easier settings, you're going to be hopefully progressing forward.
So Joe, let me share something with you that gets to the topic of where do you start therapy when ADHD and stuttering co-occur? And recently I had a school-based therapist contact me regarding a child who stutters who also has ADHD. And the therapist, I think, was right when she said to me that the ADHD was really the big issue at this time. And the stuttering was, I dare say, a minor part of what was causing this child problems during their school day. But the parent was very, very concerned about the stuttering and not so much concerned about the ADHD. So do you come across these type of things much? And generally speaking, where do you start therapy?
Well, I think to answer that question, you have to tell me which individual you're talking about, because we're going to start therapy differently with each individual, depending on how they present, depending on what they do. So I think before we talk about how you start therapy, you really have to jump back and start talking about how do you gather the data to really see what's happening. And when I talk about the data, I want to see what's happening in that individual's speech pattern, with their language skills, with their communication in general, with their social pragmatic abilities. How are they doing in an academic setting? How are they doing socially with peers? And so you collect all of that data. And when you're collecting that data, you're doing it in a scientific fashion so you can understand things. But then you also want to get the individual to kind of analyze the data and give what they know. You want to talk to their family. You want to talk to their entire team, whether it be their teachers, whether it be coaches, whether it be a medical team. And you really want to pull it all together by seeing what seems to be the most problematic issue or the most problematic issues at that point. Now, you said that parents often say, well, I'm not worried about the ADHD. Let's just work on the stuttering and things like that. The hard part there is sometimes you have to start working on the attention and focusing in order to impact the speech and language issues. And often a family will feel more comfortable saying my child stutters than saying my child has ADHD. Because in our world, especially in our country right now, ADHD is still seen as something bad. You know, it seems that the individual, there's a problem with the individual because they have ADHD, or there's a problem with the family, or there's a problem with it's someone's fault that they have ADHD. So it's interesting that often folks will want to focus on the stuttering because they don't want to talk about that other stuff. And the other thing is the impact that ADHD and stuttering has on their overall communication skills, that can be the most upsetting for families. Because that's what's in their face all the time when they're talking to the child, when the child's zooming and talking about too much information and giving too much and blurting out answers and all of that. It can really cause friction in a family. So they're going to identify that as a speech problem, where what we've been talking about today is it's resulting in a speech problem, but it's probably most likely the underlying attention and focusing issue that's resulting in that. So I think by gathering the data, by giving yourself permission not to have all the answers, by giving yourself permission not to have to make a therapy plan that goes from start to finish and cures a child, by giving yourself permission to have the individual child and their family kind of explore with you and not necessarily know where that journey is going to lead you, but by working with them and by adjusting your plan as needed and being flexible there, I think that's the best place to start and the best way to progress forward.
I am so glad I asked you that last question, Joe, because you went exactly where I wanted you to go with it. And when I speak to this therapist again, I'm going to mention this program. She should check it out. And I'm going to mention that I think there's a very high likelihood that the parents may view the speech or language issues resulting from ADHD as stuttering. So the revisions of speech that are probably reactions or symptoms of ADHD, the parent may confuse and think that is the stuttering.
Yeah, don't you find, Peter, that it's funny to me that we often see the parents with young children who come in don't want to use the S word, stuttering. So they come in and they say, we don't want to talk about stuttering. We don't use that word. And they're scared of that word,
right,
and they don't want to use it in front of the kid. What I find is when you're talking about stuttering and ADHD, most families love to talk about stuttering and want to avoid using the term ADHD.
Yeah, I'm sure you see that more than me, but I've absolutely seen what you're talking about for sure. And my colleagues have too, because I've recently received phone calls on this very topic. So, this conversation has been very helpful for me. Dr. Joe Donaher from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, I could keep you all day, but let me just ask you one last question. Can you close us out here? What are your closing comments?
Well, again, my closing comments are going to kind of circle back to what I said in the beginning, and that I want to emphasize to clinicians that working with people who stutter, working with kids who are struggling with ADHD, sure, it can be daunting and intimidating and scary, but it also can be tremendously rewarding. I often talk to speech language pathologists, and I say that the SLPs that work with people who stutter get more presence during the holiday season. And the reason that is because if you're working with people who stutter, you really get to know the individual. You get to know their family. You get to know what they're doing. And you really work at things as a team. And for anyone who's still scared of working with people who stutter or scared of working with ADHD, I would strongly advise you to start and to really give yourself some time, and because I think the rewards that you get from that are tremendous.
Well, Joe, I can't thank you enough for sharing your wisdom and experience on this topic of ADHD and stuttering today.
Thanks, Peter.